Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio. Today's July 7th, 2008. And on this day, the United States annexed Hawaii. And can you guess what year we annexed Hawaii? No, it was not 1959. That was the year it became a state. We annexed Hawaii in 1898, long before a lot of people figured out it was a great vacation destination. And it's the birthday of some great artists and musicians. Marc Chagall was born on this date. Wait for it, 1887. Gustav Mahler. A lot of people don't like his dirges, his rather plodding music, it seems to them, but he was a genius composer. He was born in 1860, just about the time we were electing Abraham Lincoln and starting the Civil War. And it's the birthday of that giant of a musician, Ringo Starr. He was born in 1940, which makes him 68. It's amazing that the Beatles are pushing 70, the ones that are left. But he's 68 years old. Well, let me move on a little bit, because everybody that listens to my show knows that one of the fundamental tenets here is that, well, I am left of center, and I freely admit to being on the Democratic side of issues, on the liberal side of a lot of issues. I am not a 20%er, okay? And I believe that it's the 20% of the people on the far right and the 20% of the people on the far left that are ruining this country for the rest of us. And what happens is we've ceded the airwaves to them. That is, without any particular concerns or any particular conscience or need to get things right or be fair, we have all these folks that have radio shows, TV shows, and they're spewing out a tremendous amount of misinformation. And it drives me just a little bit crazy. So let's start with Monica Crowley. And I don't know if I have the stamina to listen to Monica's whole thing here, but she basically takes several minutes to make the case that Barack Obama stole his slogan, "Yes, we can," from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran. Of course, this is part of the not-so-subtle attempt of Republicans, conservatives, and particularly talk show hosts to tie Barack Obama to terrorism, as though, and to Muslim, or to Islam. Okay, the rumors are on the internet about this. And the press is reporting them sometimes without contradicting them and pointing out that they're false. Barack Obama never was a Muslim. His father was Muslim for a few years, and then apparently became an atheist. And Obama was educated in Indonesia, but for 4 years. But the first 3 years, he was in a Catholic school over there. So he wasn't being indoctrinated in a madrasa the way the right wing reported it a few months ago, and then blamed Hillary for the leak. And of course, neither of those things were true. Anyway, here's Monica Crowley filling in for Laura Ingraham and taking a long roundabout way, we might have to fast forward through some of it, to get to her point where she thinks she's being very clever, I think.
Research on Barack Obama and his campaign slogans, and what I found was very interesting. You know Barack Obama's big campaign line, "Yes, we can," si se puede, or he tried to translate it into Latin over the last week and toy with the presidential seal. Well, "Yes, we can." You know, those are three really powerful words, right? "Yes" is positive, it's affirmative. "We" is all about togetherness, it's collective, it's everybody as one. And "can" is action-oriented. It's doers, not talkers. "Yes, we can." Three of the most powerful words that you can use, especially in politics, with the exception of "free," of course. But "yes, we can." Probably mobilize people, especially in politics, more than any other words you can use. Well, it turns out that Barack Obama actually stole that campaign line. You know, he steals a lot of stuff, but he stole that campaign.
He steals a lot of stuff? Where is she getting that from? She doesn't say, of course.
Campaign line. And you recall a couple of months ago, there was a controversy because Obama stole some of his other campaign stock lines from the Massachusetts governor and his friend, Deval Patrick. Well, he didn't steal Yes You Can from Deval Patrick, but he did steal it from somebody else. You'll never guess. Can you guess? You'll never guess. I better tell you. Here's a hint. Knowing Barack Obama and his predilection to wanting to talk to terrorists, you might be able to guess this. Can you? No. All right, I better tell you.
So I don't know that Barack Obama has said he wants to talk to terrorists. I think he said he's willing to talk to the leadership of any government that we have to deal with in the world without preconditions. Doesn't mean he will do it. He's just saying he would be willing to do it. That has been totally misrepresented by people like Ms. Crowley, who either doesn't have the intellectual capacity to understand Obama's position, or it's so foreign to her that she fails to understand that it's a pretty reasonable approach.
Obama lifted his campaign line, Yes We Can, from the recent presidential campaign of the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the shrimp in the windbreaker. The shrimp in the windbreaker actually ran several years ago on the slogan, on the very slogan, We Can. We can. We can stick our fingers.
Okay, so I'm going to stop Monica Crowley there before she embarrasses herself any further. There's only one problem with her analysis. Oh, first of all, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's slogan does not translate exactly as we can, but he was elected in 2005, and he came to the fore because, in large part, because the Bush administration, in rattling the saber against Iran, caused them to go nationalistic. And Ahmadinejad fed off of that, and he probably would not have been elected had the Bush administration been using diplomacy instead of cowboy diplomacy during those years. But he ran in 2005 and used this slogan that Crowley says Obama stole from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. It's only one problem. Barack Obama has been using this slogan for years, Yes, We Can. And it goes back at least to his 2004 Senate campaign. So the folks on the right wing just kind of make this stuff up. But, of course, there's no editor, there's no checks and balances on a radio show like that. So that's what you get. Let me move on to Glenn Beck. This is just last week, and this is him complaining about the Supreme Court decision on habeas corpus. Now, keep in mind what the Supreme Court decision said. It basically said that when the President of the United States declares someone an enemy combatant and puts them in the slammer, you can't hold them indefinitely without giving them a chance to hear the charges against them and prove them false. You get a habeas corpus hearing. It's that simple. And the hearing doesn't mean they're released. It simply means they get a hearing. And what the right often forgets is that approximately two-thirds, maybe it's only 55-60% of the prisoners we had in Guantanamo were pretty much guilty of nothing, certainly nothing in the realm of terrorism. They were rounded up in Afghanistan and Pakistan, in Iraq, and handed over to Americans by people who wanted to collect the bounty that we were paying for terrorists. And we rounded up and flew to Gitmo a lot of completely innocent people, other people who really aren't a danger to us. But that's how we handled it. So given that we know there were innocent people there, next time you hear a right-wing talk show host complain that we're setting terrorists free, keep in mind that A, they ain't all terrorists, and B, a habeas corpus decision does not set them free. But here's Glenn Beck suggesting that, well, you know what we should do, or what the military will do next time? They'll just shoot them on the battlefield. Let's just shoot them in the head, and we won't have to worry about the Supreme Court telling us that we can't waterboard them.
Joe, I mean, I'm saying this in jest, but it really is that, isn't it? I mean, it's going down that road, isn't it? Holy cow, Joe just said this decision is frightening when you read the language. This court has done some frightening, frightening things.
So he doesn't elaborate what he considers frightening, but of course the current Supreme Court is slightly right of center. I don't agree with a lot of their decisions, but frightening? Saying that people have a right to hear the accusations against them and rebut them? that's frightening. You know, President Bush has claimed the right to declare anyone in the world an enemy combatant and hold them indefinitely. That could be you or me. You say it's ridiculous, but that's the right he's claiming as president in wartime, that he should be allowed to do that.
With Guantanamo? Gang, I got news for you. We're in deep trouble with Guantanamo. We can't do this. We're going to give these guys access to our courts. Let me say something. If I were president of the United States, I would go on national television and say, ladies and gentlemen of America, the Supreme Court said that we don't have Guantanamo, so that is over. We're going to release all of them, but I want you to...
Okay, so the Supreme Court did not say that we, quote, don't have Guantanamo. What it says is the president can't declare someone an enemy combatant and hold them indefinitely. It's a total overreaction by people on the far right, but this is why people like Glenn Beck shouldn't even have a TV or radio show, but they do.
To know from here on out, our policy is to not have prisoners. We're going to shoot them all in the head. If we think that they are against us, we're going to shoot them and kill them, period. Because that's the only...
Notice it isn't if we know they're a terrorist, we kill them in the field. It's if we think they're against us, you go ahead and kill them, because we shouldn't have to live with these restrictions that the Supreme Court says we must live with.
The only thing we've got going for us is we can put them away and get information. If we can't put them away and they're going to use our court system, kill them.
Okay, well, of course we can put them away. Just the fact that we give them a habeas corpus ruling doesn't mean that we can't lock them up, get useful information from them, and put them away. But the problem with 20%ers like Glenn Beck is that they see everything in black and white. So when one thing that the Bush administration wants to do gets thwarted, he sees it as a reason to go out and shoot people in the head if we think they might be against us. Okay, Glenn. Well, for you, this song is dedicated.
There's a man who leads a life of anger, and every day he gets a little stranger. With every word he speaks, he yells, he whines, he shrieks. Odds are he won't understand tomorrow. Right-wing talk show host, ignorant talk show host. They've given you a time slot and taken away your brain. There's a group who spend their time complaining. It's bad enough they think that's entertaining. But their lenses are so skewed that all you can conclude, they're desperate for some IQ they can borrow. A rigid talk show host, fatty talk show host, we're giving you a platform, it's time you were diagnosed. Right-wing talk show host, pompous talk show host. We've given you a forum, but you're still as deaf as a post.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio, and as long as we're talking right-wing talk show host, let's talk a little bit about the number one right-wing talk show host. He just signed a $400 million deal. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh is going to be with us for another 8 years. He is wildly successful, and it turns out the more disconnected from the facts you are, the more successful you are. It doesn't matter whether you're Howard Stern or you're Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage. Those guys make their money because they get emotional and they say the things that come into their head and that confirm the prejudices of large segments of the American people. Doesn't matter that it's full of misinformation. Here is Rush Limbaugh from last week explaining how Democrats don't want to honor soldiers, that Democrats are fundamentally different and liberals are fundamentally different, that while Republicans and conservatives are patriotic, Democrats and liberals are evil and want to destroy America. Now, he doesn't actually say that here today, but he certainly said them before.
For example, I have a story in the stack of stuff today. The last batch of troops sent over to Iraq for the surge will be soon coming home. They will not receive anything from the Democrat Party.
So first of all, keep in mind and remember that Rush is one of those Republicans who disrespects half the country by refusing to call them by their chosen name. He will not call the Democratic Party the Democratic Party. He, months or years ago now, has shortened it to the Democrat Party because Republicans don't like the idea that the word Democratic is in the party name. It makes them sound like they might be Democratic, and they don't want that, so they decide to use their own names. We've covered this before, but he's arguing here that no one in the Democratic Party will honor the service men and women when they come home. He doesn't provide any evidence, of course. And there's plenty of evidence to the contrary in the public record, but that never stops El Rushbo.
Along the likes of, job well done. We're proud of you. And this is highly distressing. Not only will Democrats not say, nor leftists, say to any returning troops from Iraq, good job. Job well done. We honor your service.
So he says that no Democrats and no leftists will do that. Well, I don't consider myself quite a leftist, but I'm certainly left of center. I'm certainly in the category of being a Democrat. And I've said to any number of people, service people, directly, like people who I meet face to face, job well done, thanks for your service. I say it on my radio show. That's my sentiment anytime I meet or talk about the troops. It's just that Rush Limbaugh and the Bush administration have been hiding behind the troops for several years. So any criticism of their policy, they try and morph it into a criticism of the troops, when in fact, it's a criticism of the Bush administration policy.
No, they did just the opposite. They sought to secure defeat of the U.S. military in Iraq. They sought to discredit the surge.
Okay, they sought to secure defeat. They sought to discredit the surge. This is black and white thinking, of course. The blue state of mind says that multilateralism works, unilateralism doesn't work as well, that wielding soft power is more effective than wielding military power a lot of times. And so if you believe that going into Iraq was a mistake, and you believe that putting 150,000 troops in the middle of the Muslim world is stirring the pot unnecessarily, and if you believe that taking out Saddam only strengthens Iran's hand, then you'd want to get out of Iraq as quickly as you could. So where Rush and John McCain and Bush want to say they prefer defeat, they want to secure defeat, they want defeat, no, we believe that being in Iraq is hurting America's national interests. And that's why we want to get out. Now, you believe is staying is helping your the national interests. I don't sit here and say that Bush and Cheney want to waste $1 trillion or that Rush Limbaugh wants to waste 4,000 American lives. I give them a minimal amount of credit that they actually believe they're doing what's best for America. You don't get that from Rush Limbaugh or right-wing talk show hosts. They want to impugn your character, your patriotism, your judgment, all of it.
Surge before it had even begun. They called the architect of the surge, General Petraeus, essentially a liar before he had even opened his mouth to give them in Congress a report.
Let me just point out that this myth that Petraeus is the architect of the surge, George W. Bush got rid of the generals that agreed with the 2006 Baker-Hamilton report that said, you know, we should be pulling our troops out of Iraq now, and we should be talking to Syria, Iran, the other people who are our enemies. Bush didn't like the answer he got from the adults on that committee, so he didn't want to listen to them. So there was a little piece in there that the Republicans on the committee had insisted be inserted, and it basically said, we could see where a short-term surge in troops might help us withdraw. Bush jumped on that as the only avenue he had to continue his plan to stay there. And then he got rid of the generals that didn't agree with that until he found Petraeus, who said, yeah, I could sign up for that policy, and I could put a counterinsurgency plan in place for you. Mr. President, Bush made him a four-star general, and now he's the go-to guy for Iraq for Bush. Not because Petraeus was the architect of the surge. The Bush administration is the architect of the surge. Let's be really clear about that.
We face really challenging times. The left wing in this country is on a tear to restrict as much freedom and as much movement as they can.
Gee, if you sit here and look at all the wiretapping stuff and all the other stuff that's going on, it's hard to see how the left wing is trying to restrict freedoms. But I guess when you live in Rush Limbaugh's bubble, that's the way it seems.
2 days in a row, I've had stories in the stacks of stuff here celebrating, drive-by media stories, celebrating the end of the SUV. And this is because people can't afford the gas price anymore. SUVs use a lot of gasoline, so people, A, aren't buying new ones, and they're trying to sell the ones that they have. And there are people happy about this.
So what's interesting there about Limbaugh is that he free associates there. So where he's jumping over to the SUV story, and this is what makes him a pretty poor radio talk show host, is he doesn't segue to different stories. He expects you to connect the dots that he has connected in his mind. But what he's basically saying is that the problem with liberals is, and so not only are liberals unpatriotic and want defeat, but also they have glee over the fact that people have hardship with their large SUVs. You know, there may be some liberals that are saying, I told you so. But all Rush is saying is that he's had stories on the last few days about the difficulties people have paying for the gas for their big cars, and they're trying to sell them. And of course, if you're following this at all, you know that dealers aren't giving you very much when you turn in these vehicles because they've got too many of them. They can't sell them all. And he's saying that liberals are taking joy in that. You know, I'm a liberal. I don't take particular joy in what people are facing. It's supply and demand. It's the marketplace. That's the way it always works. If you buy something that people ultimately don't want in a couple of years, you get burned. That's just the hand of the market. It's not anything to be glad or not glad about. But I could see where there are probably liberals out there you could find who would be quoted, who would say, yeah, I'm glad this happened. But the biggest problem that right-wing talk show hosts have is that they want to take something like the SUV thing and then paint it as though all liberals believe this. They set up a straw man, then claim all liberals or all Democrats are of this ilk. And of course it's not true. Just like it's not true that all right-wing talk show hosts use these all these same techniques. But a lot of them use a lot of them. And the Andy Finn Show will be back on WEBR right after this.